Hello and welcome to the Browns Blitz. I'm your host, Rod Bloom, and today is Wednesday, December 18th, coming up on Christmas. This will be episode number 32, and I am excited to be joined by Alec Sapolin today.
How's it going, in and up?
That's going great. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing really good. You know, Christmas is 7 days away. Hope everyone got their Christmas wish list ready. Unfortunately, Browns going to the playoffs doesn't seem very likely.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. And it also doesn't sound like the other wish that a lot of people are asking me about on Twitter, the fire Freddy. I don't think that's going to happen either just yet. So
we'll get into it.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit, but why don't you fill everybody in on what's going on in your life? You're a student at the University of Oregon, right?
Yeah, I am. I just finished up my first term here. Just finished actually last night. I was on a plane heading back from San Francisco for a business trip, and it was just a little networking event. And I've been plugging some stuff, following some Browns beat writers, and hanging out with fans left and right. It's just been a crazy ride. It's just been a crazy, I want to say, last 3 or 4 months here.
Very nice. And you're a journalism major, right?
I am.
Excellent. So where is that going to take you, Alec? What do you want to do?
Honestly, whatever sports. You know, if I can get it into a sport, if I can get working with the Browns, Indians, Cavs, or any sport, you know, I feel like they will be getting a very good, experienced writer and a true professional in the process.
Yeah, and you've done all stuff other than writing too, I know. So you've got a pretty well-rounded background already at your young age. So I know you're going to bring a lot to the table for wherever you land. So definitely putting an excellent resume together.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. So let's kick it off. You know, the Browns got their butts handed to them by the Cardinals. It was not a very watchable game. It's not what I expected. You know, I really expected this to be a tough game for the Browns, but I thought that it would be more of a shootout type game, you know, where maybe the Cardinals were keeping up with the Browns, but the Browns would be scoring on that Cardinal defense. And the Browns offense did okay. I mean, they put up 24 points, and I think the last touchdown was probably a little bit of garbage, but garbage time. But man, they just got whooped. So
yeah, I don't know what's going on with the Cleveland Browns. We have a perennial future Hall of Famer wide receiver, two of them, and there's a disconnect between the quarterback and those two wide receivers. Now, that's not the only problem. We have the league-leading rusher in our backfield, and we have another killer running back. So I don't understand why there's not a run game and why it's okay just to stick with the air raid when we have so many talented weapons in and around this team that... Well, we don't have anything.
It's funny. I'm looking at the stats, and it's just like, is this the game I was watching? Because Baker completed 30 passes in this game. I'm like, what? 30 of 43. High percentage, 30 completions, two touchdowns, one pick. It's a game-winning line. You know, it sounds good. And Nick Chubb ran for 127 yards, one touchdown. But then you dig into it and you look, and Nick Chubb had 17 carries. Kareem Hunt had 4. So they only combined for 21 carries. You'd like to see that number a lot higher. And a lot of the passes were of the short yardage type. Kareem Hunt, you know, had Kareem Hunt and Odell Beckham Jr. both had 8 catches for 60 some yards. And
66 and 62 for Odell Beckham and Kareem Hunt, respectively. Which the fact that you are, this is something that I've expounded on in previous places of employment in my writings. You know, Baker Mayfield has that distinguishable ability that's seen in Patrick Mahomes. He doesn't have a number one wide receiver. But the fact that, you know, you have a number one wide receiver on your team named Odell Beckham, who has proven his worth through every single season, and you're not targeting him, and you're not throwing to him. Like, I don't think he's had many, if any, 100-yard receiving games. Maybe one against the Jets. I don't know. But that is something that is very, very scary and concerning as a fan and as someone who looks at the media and the statistics behind it.
But here's what happens. They play the Cardinals. He's covered by Patrick Peterson, who did a pretty darn good job in blanketing him most of the game.
Oh, he did.
And Baker was zoned in on OBJ the entire game. He targeted OBJ, I believe, 14 times, unless I just quit counting at the end. I'm not sure if it was more than that or not, but I knew near the end of the game it was 14 targets.
13.
And okay, that's not what you're supposed to do. That's not Baker's game. Baker is supposed to spread the ball around, throw the open guy. If OBJ is covered, somebody else is open. So you have to go to the open guy. Now, apparently, Jarvis Landry thought he was the open guy because, you know, he wanted the ball more. He only had 5 receptions for 23 yards. Just a ridiculously low output for him compared to what he's been doing this season. And, you know, the only other guy that got the ball much was really Kareem Hunt. And those were all just, you know, the little dump passes that Kareem Hunt's turning into something. So, you know, nobody was really doing anything of any substance. And Baker was just so focused on OBJ. It's like, oh, man, are we trying to make up for his lack of targets all in one game? Was this really a game plan? Was this Baker trying to make something happen, or did OBJ say, give me the ball, I'm going to make this happen today? And I don't know what happened, but it was out of control. He was staring down OBJ and throwing to him constantly.
I don't know where the hell the 2018 Baker Mayfield went, where the guy that went to win the Heisman as an original walk-on went. I don't know where he went. He completely disappeared this season, and that breaks my heart. I can't watch a game because all I see is Baker not looking like he's having fun. He's looking like it's a disaster, and I don't think it has much to do with the team that he's surrounded with. I think it has to do with the system that he's in. I think, and don't get me wrong, I was on the Freddie Kitchens train for a very, very long time, but it came to a point where you're not running the damn ball. When you do, you're not doing anything. The passes are getting very sloppy. Looks like there's no accountability, despite what is being said. There doesn't seem to be any connection between the wide receiver room to the running back room, to the tight end room, to the lineman room, to the quarterback room. And the same thing can be said on defense. I mean, Kenyon Drake, former player for Miami, one of the worst teams in the league, 22 attempts, 137 yards with 4 touchdowns. If you say that there isn't a disconnect in this team right now, I don't know what Cleveland Browns team you're watching, or I don't know what you've been smoking.
I mean, there are definitely issues, but I don't know if you're going to put this all on Freddie, we're going to disagree.
I'm not putting it on Freddie. I'm putting it on the entire coaching staff.
Yeah, yeah. I know there are issues, but you know, let's go back to Baker. And the fact is, and people are going to argue this too. People are going to put this all on the coaching, but sophomore quarterbacks take a step back frequently. Okay, I think Baker's in his own head a lot, and I'll agree this offense is not built to Baker's strengths exactly the way it could be. But he's got guys who are getting open, and how many balls has he thrown too high this season?
He's thrown too many too high.
Way too many. Now, is that the system? Is that the offensive line? That's Baker, okay? That's Baker getting in his own head. I don't care what anybody says, Baker is an extremely accurate guy. That's either a mechanics or just him getting in his own head. That's a problem that he has to work out. That is not on the coaching staff or anything else. Okay, if he completes half of those passes this season that he's thrown over guys' heads, things probably look a lot different. You know, I'm not going to say they win five more games or anything, but you know, there could be a couple two or three more games they won. Who knows?
If he completed half of those passes that he's thrown too high, we would have had a win against Los Angeles.
Yeah.
We would have won the second game against Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
We probably would have won this game on Sunday. That would have put us in at least second place, or at least like contending position for second place in the wild card.
Yeah, and how can you blame that on anybody else?
Who knows
what kind of
BS is going on in Berea? Who knows? It could be a lot of things. It could very well be Freddie Kitchens. We don't know. It also has partially to do with the media.
It does. Yeah. I agree with you there. And as far as Nick Chubb and the running game goes, Nick Chubb's leading the league in rushing. Okay. How?
You know who was the last Brown to do that? Mr. Brown, Jim Brown.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I understand. And I know that the Browns should be running the ball more, but I don't know how many more carries you want Nick Chubb to have in a season when he's, you know, on the pace he's on to run for this many yards. You know, I can see making some changes, you know, getting Kareem Hunt more involved in running the ball, you know, giving him more than four carries. I'm good with Nick Chubb getting, you know, still getting 20 carries a game, but I don't want to run the guy into the ground in one season either. Know he's never going to say that he doesn't want the carries, but you have to try to take care of a guy like that. You want his career to, you know, to have some legs to it.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'm looking at Baker Mayfield's stats as we speak. He has his completion percentage has dipped by almost 4%. It's last year was at 63.8. Now it's at 60.1. He looks like he's going to beat his yards. He looks like, and I mean, he's already thrown more interceptions than last year.
Yeah. Yeah. The interceptions are a problem, but, and I'm not going to defend the interceptions because he's made a lot of bad decisions, but geez, three or four of those picks were like balls that were practically handed from the receiver to the
opponent. We would have won the game against the Seahawks if it didn't bounce off the damn hands.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been several balls like that that have counted for picks. So his numbers aren't quite as bad as they look. I'm not going to say they're good, but I know he's had a regression. But, I still believe in Baker. I think he's going to get it figured out. I think this is a down season for him, and I think he's going to bounce back.
I think the main reason why everybody's freaking the hell out is because we set our expectations through the roof and beyond this season. And yeah, when we see our expectations crushed, that then we start to get into a divisive mentality. Like, I have never seen a fan base more divisiveness within the fandom than this year's Cleveland Browns. Oh. And I mean, there are plenty of other freaking analogies I can make. I mean, shit, look at the political scheme where, hell, we have an impeachment going on today. There has not been more divisiveness than the Cleveland Browns fandom today.
You're right. That's really good parallel. It's almost like that. It's like we're the two sides of the aisle. There's the keep Freddie, and there's the Freddie has to go right now. And Freddie is taking all of the heat. There are some people that are directing heat toward Dorsey, which is understandable too at this point because he built this thing. But you know, with the expectations, but Freddie's taken 95% of the heat for falling short of those expectations that were laid out mostly by the fans and mostly by the fans. Let's just put it that way. The Browns, I didn't hear anybody on the Browns say they were going to the Super Bowl. You know, I didn't hear, I don't even know if the press was really pushing that. I think it was mostly the fans. I mean, it was people like
me.
Probably.
Don't even get me started on the press. Oh my God.
Yeah.
They make basement operation podcasts look like credible news sources. They make them look like Pulitzer Prize winners.
Yeah. The one female reporter today in Freddie's press conference asked about Baker in the past off season, and you know, and if he had enough and this and that, and if he did enough prep in the off season or whatever, and Freddie's like, we're working on next game. We got two games left in the season. Why are you going back to the last off season? I mean, are you kidding me? What's that have to do with anything? Let's focus on what's going on here, people.
Yeah,
it's not that hard. Yeah, I agree with you totally. So yeah, we got a game coming up with the Ravens. Sunday. So
yeah, the 22nd. And I will be honest to God, I don't know how we beat them the first time. I don't know how we put up 40 against them. Lamar Jackson is playing out of his damn mind.
I'll tell you, the Browns won the turnover battle. I think 3-1 in that game. I was just looking at the stats, and Browns won the turnover battle.
Yeah, they did.
3-1, and they just playing the Browns just playing. Browns had what 530 yards of offense. Nick Chubb ran for 3 touchdowns, so he ran wild, and the Browns did enough to contain the Baltimore running game, including Lamar Jackson, to where things didn't get out of hand on that end. They certainly didn't stop them. I mean, Baltimore put up 25 points, but I think the Browns had some key stops. And, I mean, it's just – I was trying to look this box score over, you know, just later and just trying to kind of figure it all out. And you know, Jarvis Landry had a really big game that day, 8 receptions for 167 yards, and Nick Chubb ran for 165 in the 3 touchdowns. Baker, 20 for 30, 342 yards, but he was only 1 touchdown, 1 pick.
It was the Nick Chubb show.
It really was. And, but the other thing, if you look, Baltimore's defense had one hit on Baker. One hit, and yeah, I think they sacked him once the whole game. That's it.
Now, there are some keys in this game that weren't a part of the last meeting with the Ravens, and it goes like this. They gained Marcus Peters, an absolute defensive stud.
Yeah, yeah. No doubt, and they're on a roll, and they're looking for revenge at this point.
They're not on a roll. I'm not going to say they're red hot. They are white hot.
Yeah, they are. I mean, you have to give them credit. I never saw this coming.
Nobody did.
I didn't expect Lamar Jackson to be able to throw the ball the way he's thrown it. I didn't expect his body to hold up for what he's done this season. I really didn't.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just say I still feel like, you know, he's an accident waiting to happen the way he plays. So, you know, and it's their whole franchise that's going to be a problem for their whole franchise if he gets hurt. So, and he plays that way, but it's his game, and that's what they're gambling on, is that he's going to be able to stay healthy. And so far it's worked for him. And yeah, it's going to be a really tough game. So the Browns better strap on their big boy boots and be ready to defend their turf if they want to make this any kind of respectable showing, I think.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, if they play like 50% better than they played against the Cardinals, I'll be happy if they lose by 10.
I think most – how many teams have come within 10 of the Ravens this year? Not that many.
Not a whole hell of a lot.
Not that many.
Yeah, maybe 20. I'll rescind that. Maybe 20.
Yeah. Yeah, you're
because
right.
Because you have Mark Ingram. You have Earl Thomas. You have a studly defensive back room in that field. Remember, Odell Beckham and I believe Marlon Humphrey were going at it. They were going at each other's throats literally,
because I think that's a game OBJ was he was getting choked and stuff in that game, right?
Oh yeah,
yep. Yeah, headlocked and all that stuff, and yeah, Humphreys was really pretty dirty in that game.
It was really bad.
OBJ had I think only two catches for 20 yards. I wasn't there a long penalty.
Yeah, there was.
Humphrey in that game that got the Browns some yardage. But that was it.
That's about it.
He held him in check, but that allowed Landry to be open and just, you know, have a huge game. So and that's what Beckham brings. If he's not the guy, he's opening it up for Landry. So, you know, that's what he's doing. So
I'm not going into this game with high expectations, mm-hmm. I just want to see the Baker Mayfield from last year, the Freddie Kitchens mind from last year. I want to see those two, because if we have a 2018 Baker Mayfield and a 2018 mind like Freddie Kitchens with a monster like Odell Beckham, Jesus Christ, you will not like what you see if you are cheering for the guys on the other side of the field.
And you know what? How many first drives do the Browns come out and resemble the team that you're talking about from 18? And then it changes after that first drive. I want to see him play like that first drive.
Every drive.
For the whole game.
Complacency.
Go out there and act like you're trying to take something and not like you're afraid of losing something.
Yeah. You know, it's complacency.
That's kind of what it seems like.
Something I learned in varsity lacrosse. Never be complacent. These guys are being complacent halfway to hell.
You're right. Well, do you want to throw out a prediction for the score of this game, or just that you want it to be close?
I just want it to be a good game. I want it to be a good game for our team. I want it to be a bad game for their team. Now am I going to go saying that I want Lamar Jackson to tear his ACL? No, I would never wish that upon anybody.
I don't hope anybody gets hurt. I don't hope for that. Not at all. Why don't you throw out your Twitter handle and so that people can give you a follow?
You can give me a follow at A Saplin for all of my shenanigans through college, Browns, and everything in between.
All right. Any final words for all the Browns fans out there, Alec?
Don't be dividing on each other. We're all under the same colors. You know, it doesn't matter what the hell is going on. We are all still the same team. Also, fire Mary Kay Cabot and Tony Grossi, please.
All right. Hey, Alec, it's been good talking to you.
It's been good catching up with you, my friend, and it's always appreciated.
All right. You take care. We're going to welcome my brother Jeff in. How's it going, Jeff?
Hey, Rod. It's going okay. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there after another, we'll just say a brutal loss. There have been a couple this season, but this one was pretty painful.
Yeah, you know, the game was bad enough, but just the crap that we've had to endure since the game, it just wears you down, you know?
Yeah, it absolutely does. That's been pretty rough. All the stuff about Jarvis, all the speculation, the Mike Silver, just everything, just fueling the Freddie fire, the fire Freddie fires, let's say.
Right.
just all this stuff. I'm just over all this. People can't, there's just this group of people that just can't wait to just burn it all down again.
Right. Right. You know, I mean, look, we've got the leading running back in the NFL just named to the Pro Bowl. We've got another Pro Bowl receiver and could have easily had a third guy as a starter. Mm-hmm. We've got a whole bunch of alternates. This team is talented. It's got guys performing at a high level. It's amazing how soon we forget. If we rolled the clock back 2 years, to when we were going winless and we were just accepting the fact that we were going to go winless because that's what was necessary to turn this thing around. Okay. Now that we're 2 years into that, people expected a miracle, and you got to take a look at the positives that we're taking away from this season that we didn't have 2 years ago. But the just the dwelling on the negatives, it's so tiresome. I would say that in anybody's professional life, if they've been given an opportunity to assume more responsibility, let's say you got a promotion at work, something you've never done before, are you going to be perfect at that job right out of the gate? No, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to learn on the job. You're going to hopefully get better as time goes on. And I'm not just talking about the head coach here. I'm talking about an organization that for the last 20 years has done nothing but lose and done nothing but constantly thrive in chaos. And, we've had these conversations now for several years that you have to figure out a way to change that culture, and you have to figure out a way to put a winning product on the field long term. Not just, for a few games or, a season here and there. It takes effort. It takes painful growth. It takes experience. And none of these guys have that. But yet, we're ready after 14 games of yes, disappointment in terms of the product on the field. But again, 2 years ago, wouldn't we have been thrilled to have a team that was at least still talking about playoffs at this time, you know, at this point in the season? But that's not good enough for us now, you know. I guess it gets harder and harder each day to listen to the noise and not think that, hey, you know what? This is the same show that we've seen year in and year out from this team. And you're just almost waiting for that other shoe to drop, you know, where they're going to revert back to their old behaviors, because there's a certain element of the fan base and a certain element of the media that seems to, you know, just love that controversy. They just, you know, they just love that drama. In fact, you know, I think this week there's people who are actively creating drama around this team, you know.
Oh, definitely.
And you know, God, get off it for once and just let this team grow and develop. And yes, there, you know, there's going to be disappointment games, like disappointing games like against the Cardinals. But I would say that when we all went through the projections of the schedule early on in the season, we all saw this game in Arizona as being a potential tripping point. I don't think anybody thought going to Arizona was going to be an easy win.
Right.
But
no,
yet,
I did. Yeah, I thought this game could be an issue. Yeah.
Yeah, but yet everybody wants to hammer these guys for losing out there, you know. Yeah, you know what? I think watching the game, there were probably some periods, and you and I talked during the game, that, you know, it looked like some guys were not motivated, were not giving their best effort. You know, Kareem Hunt came out this week and said, you know, hey, I think a few guys probably took some plays off.
I'm sure
there's a ton of frustration on this team right now. And, you know, the natural reaction is for guys to do that. You know, why should I go out and bust my ass when everything seems to be going wrong for us all the time, right? And for Kareem Hunt to call some guys out on that, I think is healthy. There needs to be that kind of accountability on this team. Freddie has sat some players down for various reasons this season. Guys have been cut for various reasons. I just don't think they've found the right mix of players yet to change the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're still seeing some of these issues, you know, that we're so used to seeing year in and year out. But I think it's all part of the growing process. It's all part of getting out of that morass that we've been in for 20 years of just stupid, terrible football teams.
Yeah.
If we're gonna have a decent team long term, we just have to go through these growing pains.
Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree. So tell me this, Jeff. Who in the public eye, who is which players are seen as the leaders on this team?
Well, you would hope it's your Pro Bowl players and alternates. I'm not sure if that's the case at this point.
That's kind of what I was getting to. Who do we think the leaders are, and who do you think the leaders really are or should be? Because I think that Jarvis is a guy who's kind of tried to step into that role and be a team leader, and he's done an excellent job sometimes. I think he definitely faltered in the Arizona game, you know, by calling out Freddie on the sideline publicly like that. I don't think, you know, and I don't know what all that was about. Freddie's not the guy who's throwing the ball. You know, Baker's the guy who decided to stare down Odell on every single pass play almost. you know, he should have been talking to Baker. I'm sure that Baker has options on these passing plays, right? He doesn't have to throw to his first receiver every single time.
Right.
If Jarvis is open, he can throw to him. He's allowed to do that. So the whole thing with Freddie, but I think Jarvis is seen as a leader. You know, I think we think that Myles Garrett, you know, a leader. That's those are the two guys, you know, and Baker. To me, I think that the guys who are or really should be and need to be the leaders are guys like, our Nick Chubb, who is more of a quiet guy, I think, but he's not calling people out. I mean, he's not questioning things. He's doing his job. And Kareem Hunt, these guys are busting their tails. These guys are not taking plays off. They're doing whatever they're asked to do for the team. They're not complaining about how many times they touch the ball. These are the guys that, you know, who I think should be the real team leaders. And maybe that's an issue on the team.
Well, yeah. I look, you have a lot of talented, high-strung personalities on this team.
Mm-hmm.
I think in any organization, you have vocal leaders and you have leaders by example. Nick Chubb, I think, is one of those leaders by example.
Yeah.
You know, this is how you approach every day that you come to work, and, you know, just set the example for other players. Kareem Hunt's an interesting case. I mean, he's been active now six games.
Yeah, he played six games. Yeah.
167 yards rushing. You think he's thrilled about that?
No, I'm sure he's not. But I think he and Nick Chubb genuinely love playing together.
And
I really think they do. I think those guys are always sitting next to each other talking. I think those guys love playing together.
Right.
I really do.
So Kareem Hunt has decided that, you know, he's going to set aside his own personal goals for the sake of Nick Chubb's success and the team's success.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what a leader does. Okay? Yeah. In any organization, a leader is somebody people follow because they want to, not because they have to. Kareem Hunt is setting an example through self-sacrifice. Nick Chubb is setting an example through effort. Jarvis Landry will get his catches. He'll get his yards. He's very vocal. I don't think those types of leadership come naturally to him.
I think he tried by being one of the elder, you know, kind of, what do we say, elder statesmen. You know,
he's a veteran.
One of the more experienced best on the team.
Five-year Pro Bowler now, right? You would think that, you know, other players would look up to guys like that and say, hey, I want to perform at your level. I want to, you know. But realistically, not every guy is cut out to be one of those kinds of leaders. Some guys are just motivated for their own success.
And I'm going to say this. I like Jarvis. But let's face it. How many wide receivers, guys? Wide receivers are not typically going to be a team leader. I mean,
no,
just the stereotype
no.
of a wide receiver. Let's
right.
just think about the stereotype of a wide receiver. He's out to get right. his catches, to yep. do his dance, you know, to argue with DBs and get in their face and all this
Absolutely.
Stuff, you know, so it just goes completely contrary to being a team leader. So that's
Correct.
Just, that's how I see it. So I think Jarvis has done an excellent job in trying to step into this role, but I agree with you. I don't think it's a natural role for him.
Right. Right. I think he, you know, he's tried to say the right things at certain times during the year. And he's tried to, you know, work with OBJ and, you know, keep things on a level keel, but, you know, ultimately things like Sunday are going to happen and, you know, he's going to get frustrated. first of all, when you have a team with this many weapons, somebody's always going to be pissed off. You know, there's just only one football, you know, so somebody's not going to get their touches. And
well, here's the problem, though. I think there would be less guys pissed off if they're winning, because then you can say,
absolutely,
I can sacrifice my personal stuff. But these guys are all going to say, well, you know, if I would have got the ball more, we would have won. You didn't give me the ball enough, and that's why we lost.
Right.
You know, so that's, you know what Adele's thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And other guys, and, too. So,
and,
yeah.
And I think the frustration sort of feeds on itself, where, you know, guys feel that way, and the next thing you know, they're going out and they're dropping balls that they should be catching. You know, things
they're trying to do too much. Yeah.
Right. We talked about this several weeks ago, that, you know, you have to be able to perform at the level that you are capable of performing at, and not try to exceed that and do too much. And yeah, absolutely. I think that's happened with a multitude of players on this team all season long.
And the thing is, what does Freddie preach all the time? Do your job.
Right.
You know, do your job. And it's not getting done. So there's a disconnect, but is it Freddie's fault? I mean, preach. You can go to church and listen to the preacher all you want, but are you actually going to do what he's telling you to do?
Well, yeah, and it gets back to the expectations going in that, you know, it's going to be easy. All we have to do is, you know, put on the uniform and show up every Sunday because we're so talented, we're going to win. Okay, well, it doesn't work that way. You know, the margin between wins and losses in the NFL is so small that the least little bit of disconnect between players takes a talented roster and turns it into a sub-500 team. And, yeah. I, you know, you and I aren't X and O experts by any means. So we can't sit here and debate about what play should have been called in what situation. And, you know, is it a question of, you know, are guys in the right situation, or is it a lack of execution, or what's causing things to not work? Okay. But I certainly can see when guys with talent aren't playing to that level. And I don't think it's because we're not throwing the ball to somebody often enough, or we're not handing the ball off to somebody often enough. I think what we're looking at is a disjointed group of people who all have huge egos, and they've not figured out how to work together for a common goal. And again, you can say, well, that gets back to coaching. Yeah, but it's pretty unrealistic to expect a first-year head coach to be able to blend those kinds of personalities. I can only think of a handful of coaches in the NFL that would have been able to take this group of personalities and manage it over 16 games without a certain level of drama. There probably would have been significant drama no matter who was running this team.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. I was going to say, I got a great response to a tweet I put out earlier today, I think. Just about the situation with the Browns. I won't go into my tweet, but the response was essentially, and I can't give credit because I don't want to take time to find the tweet, but I do appreciate the reply that I got. It was essentially saying that the Browns were buying chandeliers and hanging chandeliers before they had the foundation completely laid, which goes back to stuff you've said.
You know, you don't go and build a trophy case until you have a few trophies to put in it.
Yeah, and so, yeah, same thing. But, yeah, so we got these chandeliers, and the foundation's not quite there yet. So So yeah, we can blame the coach, and we all know that Freddie's made mistakes. You know, and people, a lot of people probably misinterpret, and I'll keep saying it. People misinterpret. They think I'm a Freddie apologist, that I, you know, that I'm up his butt and everything, and that I just love the guy and everything. I think Freddie's got some great characteristics. I think he can turn into a good coach. I also think that you can't tell after 14 games what kind of coach a guy is. You also can't tell based on what he's been given this season what kind of coach he is.
Well, and the reality is that we've done this before, Rod. You know, we've put guys in that position. We've expected a miracle out of them, and then when we didn't get it, we cut the cord and moved on to the next guy. And
well, that's what the fans expect now.
Right. Yeah. It's become our regular mode of operation. And my question is if you could dial this thing back to the start of the season or, you know, end of last season. Okay. Knowing what you knew about the last several games last year and the success that Freddie and Baker had at the end of last season, and, you know, the benefit of hindsight now, okay, who would you gone and gotten as a coach, if not Freddie? And I think, you know, every fan would say, geez, you know, I think that was the right hire at the time.
So, a lot of people are saying different now, okay?
Well, of course right they now. Are now.
Yeah, right now.
Of course they are now. But if you went back to last year, okay, what was a better option for this team than to invest in that relationship? Right.
Well, I think we all felt like that if we didn't keep Freddie was going to go somewhere else and be a star. I think that's kind of how it felt.
Right.
I think Freddie was hired because they really felt like he was the right guy for the job. Not just because, oh, we can't let this guy get away. He might be something. I think he went through the interviewing process, did well, and I think that they had or have faith in Freddie. I think that's why he's here.
All right. So if not Freddie, it would have likely been someone who probably would have performed even worse. Is that a fair statement?
It probably would have been an assistant from another team, I think. Probably with no head coaching I don't know, like Stefanski. I don't know what kind of experience he has outside of being a coordinator. He's a name I'm hearing even now. People are saying, oh, we should have gotten him. Great. He's running a great defense now, okay? That mm-hmm. doesn't mean he would have been a great head coach here either. And, you know, I'm not going to say he wouldn't have been, but – How do you know?
And you don't.
People need to go back and look at the beginning of our schedule again and look at the road that, you know, and I'm not talking the Tennessee game, but look at the other games that the Browns played and the tough schedule the first part of the year and some of the games that were lost. And, you know, and then look again at the fact that the Browns trounced the Ravens when nobody else has been able to do that this season. You know, they've actually picked up a few quality wins along the way this year. And, you know, along with beating, they've beat everybody in the division once. You know, when's the last time that happened?
Right. Well, you made the point that, you know, we haven't had back-to-back 6-plus win seasons in 17 years or something. Yeah. We haven't beaten teams in our division in forever. This season, the struggle was with beating West Coast teams. We're 0-5 against West Coast teams.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the toughest things for any team to do, is to either travel to the West Coast and beat a West Coast team, or have those guys come to your place and play to their level if it's one of the better teams in the league. San Francisco is one of the better teams in the league. Seattle's one of the better teams in the league.
Tough games. We knew those were going to be tough games.
We knew those were going to be tough games. And, you know, so
we had to go to Foxborough this year.
Right.
I mean being under the microscope. That is a win.
Right. You know? Being under the microscope each and every week and calling every game a must win. Okay. It's setting you up for disappointment. And I'm so tired of the fan base and the media just wallowing in this disappointment around the Browns. You know, just people need to stop feeling sorry for themselves and realize that, yes, we have a talented roster. We've got some young players who have great careers ahead of them. There's probably going to need to be some adjustments in the offseason to the roster, maybe to the coaching staff. But you know what? That's how you get better every year.
That's right.
And next year, you know, next year, maybe we compete for a playoff position. You know, maybe it's the year after that. But if we're winning, you know, as many games as we're losing, isn't that better than going 0-16?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's never enough. It's never enough for us.
Well, that's true. The fans need to, I don't think a lot of fans have that type of perspective though. A lot of the younger fans, they don't understand what it takes to really turn a team around, and I don't know if they haven't particularly been following the team long enough or what.
Well, particularly when you take a franchise that wasn't especially concerned about being turned around for a couple decades. I don't think there was much of a commitment ever in Berea to building the team the right way and laying that elusive foundation we keep talking about. Okay. If there was, we would have done it in the last 20 years. The reality though is that every couple of years we strip it down and start over because we think that's the way to suddenly get better. And what you end up with is you do the same thing over and over and over, and you never get anywhere. And, you know, look at drafts going back even the last 4 or 5 years. We have almost nobody to show for those high picks that we had. We endured the pain of that teardown so that we could accumulate these assets, right? And then every few years, we flip coaching staffs, we flip general managers, we flip the roster over. So instead of having players in that, 3 to 7 year window where they're in their prime, all these players are gone.
They're playing somewhere else. They're playing on contending teams somewhere.
Yeah. And right now, the 2016-2017 drafts, we have almost nothing to show for them. Where, if you're going to be a consistent winner, you have to have guys playing at a high level for 5 or 6 years after you draft them high like that. And we've never been able to do that, aside from, the very rare guy, Joe Thomas. Okay. I mean, you take him number 3 overall. He's a can't miss Hall of Fame type of guy coming out of college. He plays for you, never misses a snap for 11 years or whatever it was. He is the exception. We need to have 10 guys on the roster like that. Not Hall of Fame guys, but guys that just go out there and play at a high level every game for years. And that just doesn't happen in Cleveland because we blow it up, we cast all those guys aside, and we think the next batch of guys is going to fix everything. Whether you're talking about general managers, coaches, or players, there's truth in that. And we have to get past that as fans.
Well, yeah, I mean, what you're talking about is the foundation. That's the elusive foundation. It's having that core of players. That's really it. And I mean, it goes beyond that. It's having consistency and respectability with your coaching staff and your front office. But when you have constant turnover in your players, you have no foundation. You know, guys are walking in and out the door, and there isn't even anybody, you know, designated at some points to be, you know, to be the team representative to welcome guys. Like, oh, wait, who's been here the longest now? You know, when, at the peak of when they're stripping these things down. It just gets to be ridiculous. You got guy. There's nobody that's been on the team longer than a couple years in some of these cases, you know, other than Joe Thomas. It's like there's no foundation at all.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and that's, I guess that's what drives us both crazy about this, is that, you know, we've seen this time and time and time again, and, you know, it seems like every year we get to a point in the season where we just want to fall back on those old habits, and let's just do what we've always done. Let's attack individuals for their lack of performance. Let's go out and find somebody better. Well, guess what? It hasn't worked in 20 years. So maybe we should try something different.
That's right. Everybody feels like there are these unforgivable sins that a coach commits. And once one of them happens, there's no alternative other than to show them the door and to start over. Right. You know, with Freddie, he's lost the locker room. Darn it, we got to get into somebody else. You know, locker room, it's gone, or whatever the case might be. You know, It's like, no, you know, that's not the only answer. First of all, you don't know what the exchange was that happened between, you know, he and Jarvis. These other things are rumors, so you know, don't assume the ship is sinking quite yet.
Right.
Anyway, so the Browns have a couple games left. Tough game against the Ravens, and then they have a game against the Bengals. And I'm going to tell you what I'm hearing at Cincinnati is that the Bengals would like to lose to Miami and then beat the Browns to finish the season. That'll give them the first pick in the draft, and it'll help them to make the Browns season worse.
Right. Well, you know, you can start to play the draft game. Interestingly enough, I was looking at the order, projected order based on records right now. I think we're 15th, something like that.
Okay.
But we have the potential, if everybody in front of us wins and we lose, we could actually finish ahead of the Cardinals in the draft order by virtue of them having a tie. And we could be as high as, I think, number 6 in the draft order. I don't think anybody has, you know, started to talk about that yet. But boy, that's something for the fan base to get excited about, huh?
Go 6-10 and pick 6th.
Right.
It's got a certain appeal to it.
Yeah. For the average Cleveland fan, I'm sure it does. Look, this is a fairly deep, and I haven't studied it in depth yet, but fairly deep draft at the offensive tackle position. I think no matter where we end up, there's a good opportunity to pick up a really nice offensive tackle, which we desperately need in the first round.
And the second, maybe.
And third.
Could be the first 2 picks. It wouldn't surprise me.
It's a glaring weakness.
For sure.
Glaring weakness. So, you know, regardless of how poorly we finish the season or how well we finish the season, I think, you know, our path is set on what's going to happen in the draft. It's just a matter of, you know, who we might have to choose from. But I honestly, I think the Ravens game is going to be a tough one, like you said. You know, they have just gone on a run that, you know, we see teams do every once in a while, where they've just sort of all clicked. They've got a novelty offense that right. the league hasn't quite figured out yet. They will. Ultimately, somebody will figure out that offense. I think the Browns may Browns have
the only team who figured it out so far.
Well, yeah, I mean, we had a different roster at that point, but you know, we were able to slow that offense down.
Right.
You know, I seriously doubt we're going to be able to do that again with the personnel we have now.
Not with the current defense, no.
And unless you know suddenly we figure out what ails us on offense, I don't see us putting up 40 points again. So it's going to be tough to win that game. It just is.
Yeah, I think we'll need more than 40 too.
Yeah, and you know, no matter what was going on noise wise outside of that, I think we would have all looked at this, knowing what we know, as a very tough game.
Right.
So, you know, let's not go out and hang people in effigy if we lose again on Sunday. We're right. pretty much expecting it right now. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, the measuring stick is the Bengals game. If the Browns go out and look engaged and reasonably execute, okay, I'm not saying play the perfect game, okay, but at least come out ready to play and play more or less how we would expect them to play against the Bengals, there's no reason on earth to beat the Bengals in that last game. The only reason that the Browns would not beat the Bengals in that last game is if the wind is completely out of the sails of all the players and they're just kind of mailing it in and say, you know, screw it, okay? And at that point, it's going to be really hard in Berea to do some off-season evaluations. So, and yeah. I would say that, you know, Freddie's not the only guy that ought to be concerned about that. I think pretty much everybody in that building better be concerned about it at that point.
That's true. Here's what could change all of that, though, Jeff, is if a lot of guys don't even start that Bengals game. You know, what if they pull a lot of guys and don't start Baker in that game? You know, don't start Jarvis, don't start some other guys. I mean, there's some guys that probably want to start for their numbers, but
right.
You know, what if they pull a lot of guys and just say, you know, this game doesn't matter now.
You know what? If I'm the coaching staff, I'm trying to win that game, and I'm playing anybody who's healthy enough to play. I'm not sitting anybody down, coaching decision unless there's some sort of an issue during the week.
Yeah.
Okay. If a guy's healthy enough to play that last game, as an NFL head coach, I think you're trying to win every game you can win. So I think everybody's going to play. Okay. It's not like college, you know, where you know that I've got a bowl game coming, I can rest my starters, or, you know, if we had already solidified the division, and knew what our playoff slot was going to be, maybe. Okay. But not when everybody's being evaluated that last game.
Yeah, they're all fighting for jobs. Yeah.
Everybody on that roster's got to be fighting for a job.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they can get that one at least. I think the Ravens game is going to be a tough one. So
right, right. Well, look, we would have all been thrilled with better results this year. I think it was a tough roster. Just, you know, the personalities, the egos. It's just been a tough year. Tough to watch. Tough to listen to the noise. I hope that this team figures out a way to be professional and finish the season like professionals, because they all get paid to do this. Finish the season like professionals. And that's, you know, right. What? We'll all take our chances in the off season.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I've got faith that they'll do some nice tweaks to the roster and be ready to give another run in 2020.
This team is not that far off
No, it's not. It's not.
It's just not. It's not. Now, you know, you can examine everything that's happened, but the reality is it's a talented roster. It's not that far away from being a very competitive. Every team in the NFL is competitive from week to week. We just got to get over that hump.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with you. All right. Well, all right. Well, good talking to you, Jeff. We're gonna head on out here. So this has been the Browns Blitz. We will catch you all next time.